Welcome, friends, to ArtCast. Hey, I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, coming to you once again with architecture information. And on this episode, we're going to be back in the studio with the guys from Patterns and Practices, where I sometimes help them out and host a Patterns and Practices live episode. And on this episode, we were talking about how you use Kerberos tokens to secure web services with WYSI 3.0. And it's a really fascinating discussion because it's one of these where there's lots of options. You could use X509 certificates, you could use username tokens. And so the question is, when would you want to use a Kerberos token? And if you did want to use one, what do you have to do to make it work? And so these are great guys. They know their stuff. And you're going to really enjoy these guys because, well, hey, they're cool, they're Patterns and Practices, and they're here on ArtCast.
Yay! Thanks very much, and welcome everyone to Patterns and Practices Live. I am so delighted to be back here in the soggy Northwest, where we just set a new record for a 30-day rainfall total of over 13.5 inches. Wow. So no more weather forecast today, but I'd like to welcome in studio, we have a very full house here today, Dwayne Taylor, project manager from RDA. Welcome, Dwayne.
Thanks, Ron.
And we're also joined by Mark Fussell, lead program manager from the Windows Communication Framework team.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. And also Don Smith, product manager for Patterns and Practices.
Hey, everyone.
And on the phone, Lonnie Wall from RDA Corporation. Lonnie is a principal architect.
Thanks, Ron.
Does that mean you help schools with their educational needs or no?
I'm actually working for a school system.
There you go. What can I say? Bad joke, but it worked anyway. All right. So we have a full agenda today. We're going to be talking about how you secure web services using Kerberos with WYSI 3.0. So there's a lot of information. We're not going to run down the agenda too much, but just keep in mind that's what we're covering. And this is just one piece of a much larger work for the web services security patterns. And Don, this is a really amazing work that you guys have put together.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. We released this last month in December, and so this series of webcasts, we did one exactly a week ago on X509. We have this one on Kerberos, and in 1 week we'll be doing another one live on the username token. And it's nice because we have Dwayne and Lonnie joining us today, and they were actually the authors or really important people on this project.
You're kidding me.
No.
I thought you wrote this.
Heck no. No, I'm not smart enough to write this.
Oh, okay.
Then, of course, we worked really closely with Mark. So we have the right people that put together this guide. As you can see from the slide, it targets architects, developers. And what's really cool about it is that it gives you a number of different ways to try to realize web service security for your solution. So this is real pragmatic guidance in the form of scenarios, in the form of patterns here. I'm going to switch to a sharing slide and let you see a little bit of the table of contents for this thing. And what you'll notice by looking at this is that it kind of flows. In Chapter 1, it really addresses a number of decisions you have to make in a particular order. So first, you have to decide, how are you going to authenticate to your web services? Next thing, how are you going to secure the messages? And then, you know, of course, there's always this decision about whether you're going to use transport or message layer security. And then it has a number of other things related to security, like resource access patterns, service boundary protection patterns, service deployment patterns. So it really is pretty comprehensive. I mean, we tried to hit the 80% on this thing, and I think the guys did just a fantastic job. So I'm going to go ahead and bounce back out of this. This just gives you a taste of what's available. The links to this guide are available in this deck, so you'll see them during the webcast, but I'll go ahead and let the guys get started presenting the rest of this stuff.
Okay, so Kerberos. Now, you know, I don't know what to say about Kerberos. I mean, you know, I know the insiders call it Kerb. You know, it's just Kerb, okay? But, you know, all I know is it just kind of does wonderful things on networks. But Lonnie, where did Kerberos come from?
Well, Kerberos basically was a project from MIT. And as you can see on the slide, it was Project Athena. The current version is version 5. And some of the background on Kerberos, it's basically been described as a implementation of the three-headed dog, which was the where the term Kerberos came from. There's actually three different pieces to providing security when authenticating with Kerberos. So the purpose of Kerberos is to provide authentication services across network boundaries. It's not really used for local authentication on a PC. Instead, it's used for authentication across boundaries in a network environment.
Okay, so in the good old days when we had these little small networks, you know, you could have a domain controller that knew about everything and everybody, and then we had to grow and larger networks had to get something better. Kerberos helps us to do that. So the components of Kerberos, who wants to address this one? Should we stick with Lonnie? He's the man. Okay, components of Kerberos, huh?
Okay, basic components of Kerberos is the key distribution center, which is the kind of the heart of Kerberos that has two main components, the authentication service and the ticket granting service. In the Windows implementation, Windows Server 2003, these are implemented on the domain controller. The authentication service is basically used to validate credentials that are provided to it and issue a service ticket, or actually a ticket that can be used to then request service tickets from the ticket granting service. So some of the capabilities that you get from the Kerberos components is the ability to have a single sign-on authentication. So you authenticate once, and then once you're authenticated, the ticket that the user received can be used to authenticate with other services. Data confidentiality is supported by being able to use keys to encrypt data across the wire. You also get data integrity, and replay detection is basically an implementation of making sure that multiple requests aren't sent to the same service repeatedly.
Okay, and so now, Mark, WYSI 3.0, what is WYSI 3.0?
So WYSI 3.0 was an add-on for Visual Studio 2005 that enables you to effectively secure web services. The way I like to think about it is you have web services today in a .NET framework. We call those ASP.NET web services, and they send you text on the wire, and it's all clear text. You can see everything that I could send as part of the message. WYSI 3.0 comes along. It's a plug-in to Visual Studio. It allows you to go up and add security to those web services, and then I can just choose the type of security I'm going to use. Last week, we talked about how we secured them with X509 certificates to provide the security. Today, we're going to talk about Kerberos and how we can take advantage of the Windows Kerberos infrastructure in Windows Server 2003 so that we can authenticate and secure our web services between a client and a service.
Okay, and just to be fair, I mean, with plain old web services like ASP.NET web services, you can do sort of simple transport level security, right? But to get message level security, we've got to go to WYSI 3.0 until Windows Communication Foundation arrives.
Well, WYSI 3.0 does give you transport level security as well.
True.
It allows you to fit in with SSL, and you know, it's just one of those decision points that Ron alluded to earlier. How do I want to choose over transport of message? And there's a number of different reasons why. What's so good about WYSI is it's a very easy to use API that allows you to take advantage of those decisions that you have to do and enables you to very quickly and easily secure web services.
Okay, so we've got some decisions we have to make, and you know, we've talked about last week X509 and where they fit in. Why would I want to use Kerberos tokens?
Well, the Kerberos tokens, Kerberos as a decision point in general, a lot of it has to do with leveraging an existing infrastructure. You know, a lot of people have Active Directory deployed, they control access, manage user identities, and try to, you know, minimize ROI or, you know, minimize their total cost of ownership by, you know, leveraging the existing mechanisms. So, you know, one of the reasons why is to do that, to, you know, not have to reinvent the wheel. Specifically in terms of message layer versus transport layer using Kerberos, some of the reasons why you may want to use it are, again, you know, you may have to have an intermediary interact with messages. One of the specific capabilities that I found useful using Kerberos at the message layer was that it also gives you a complete set of security capabilities. With Kerberos, you've got message replay detection. At the message layer, you can encrypt, you can sign messages, you can authenticate. You know, you can propagate claims about the authenticated user and get information about them, such as roles and things like that, through a centralized infrastructure.
So, you know, we talked about how last week X509 was good at bridging between organizations where there wasn't a commonality, where you couldn't say, oh, they use Kerberos, we use Kerberos, maybe, you know, you don't have those kind of guarantees. But Kerberos would be good in sort of this, we know the environment, maybe, is that what we're saying?
Yeah, like an enterprise environment.
Okay.
Yeah, the beauty of Kerberos is that it's a pre-configured security architecture that you probably may have in place in your organization already, because you're using Windows servers inside your environment. And so typically, the time that you make a decision around Kerberos is typically when you have web services inside your intranet,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to last week, the X509 certificates were very much across internet boundaries between different organizations. So you may have two different Kerberos domain controllers across company boundaries or business boundaries, but that's not so typical. But typically with Kerberos, what's so useful is you have this security infrastructure in place that allows you to rapidly take advantage of that in order to secure web services within inside your intranet.
Okay, and so another big point is, well, WSI 3.0. Why would I want to use WSI 3.0?
Well, WSI 3.0, as I alluded to earlier, it's a great way that you can plug into Visual Studio, and it provides you these pre-built turnkey security scenarios. And one of these turnkey scenarios that we call is called a Kerberos assertion. And effectively, what it means is that you can use the wizard that we've provided that plugs into Visual Studio to make decisions around how you're securing your service. And one of those decisions is, yeah, do you want to secure it with Kerberos? Take advantage of Windows security, as we call it. And in doing so, it generates this declarative policy file that declares the security requirements for your service. And you can put this policy file both on the service and the client to rapidly take advantage of securing the service.
Okay, and we talked a little bit about why we'd want to use message layer security because of intermediaries and traceability and that sort of thing. But one of our listeners is asking, is the Kerberos infrastructure with Active Directory, is it good to go for a smart client application that is sometimes on the internet and sometimes over internet? Maybe like there's a few people who work from home maybe. Could that work with Kerberos?
That's a little bit more difficult question to answer simply because of the nature of the connection between the remote computer and the network infrastructure for the corporate intranet.
Well, it would certainly work if I did a VPN connection.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. If you have a VPN connection and you're able to authenticate against your domain controller and get credentials down onto your machine, then you can fire up a smart client and then you can use Kerberos and be able to talk across from some remote machine into your web services part of your business. So yes.
No. Yeah. What's really interesting about using it for a smart client type application is that you really don't have to prompt the user for login credentials, right?
Because
they've already logged into Windows and those are the same credentials they're going to use to log into the application with. So it's really a very elegant solution.
Yeah, the single sign-on benefits of Kerberos are another very central point for trying to use it.
Okay, got it. So there, the way you guys have approached this is to say, well, we were going to build a solution as part of the describing these patterns. And so the solution objectives here are basically a secure message exchange.
Yes, and again, to the point of one of the major advantages of using message layer Kerberos is that it provides a complete set of security capabilities. Not only is it authentication, but you can also leverage the mechanism to provide data confidentiality, to encrypt messages, to prevent eavesdropping on the wire, as well as data origin authenticity, which consists of two parts. The first part is data integrity, to ensure that the message hasn't been tampered with or altered in transit, and data origin authenticity itself, which is the ability to directly associate the identity of the sender with the content that they send.
Okay, and even some advanced scenarios you covered here as well.
Yes, absolutely. Lonnie did a lot of the deeper research on Kerberos for us, and he also has a lot of experience as an architect. So we sat down and we looked at some of the scenarios, and we actually looked at some of our experience with clients to figure out where these types of things have been used or where they would be effectively used. And some of the more advanced scenarios that we had found were, of course, you know, there are oftentimes you have web applications deployed in a web farm, which has certain implications on, you know, how a token can be passed and recognized between machines and some other things that we'll get into later, as well as the ability to access multiple resources. One of the things that stumps a lot of architects and developers trying to implement Kerberos is the ability to you know, access multiple resources. You've got a client application that accesses a web service, which in turn accesses a file or another downstream resource on that user's behalf. Well, actually, it's more of a remote resource than a file. But the point is, at each hop, you're delegating the ability to act as that user to access another resource, and that has some tricks to it as well that you know, that takes some getting used to and familiarization with how to implement that.
Okay, great. So in Wizzy, Mark, one of the things you guys have done is to create these turnkey policy assertions, which is just simply put a simple name for a lot of settings, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, effectively, it's an encapsulation of a scenario where a message goes from the client to a service, an end-to-end scenario, which we've encapsulated into this policy assertion that we call it, that enables you to simply pick this up and declaratively use it against your service. This one that we use in this particular webcast we're talking about is called a Kerberos security assertion. And effectively, that identifies the SPN, the service principal name of where you're going to talk to on the service. That's what's identified on the client. Of course, you have to configure your service to be able to have that particular SPN. And then what happens is this assertion is merely configured that the client goes up and authenticates against the key DC, says, I'm wanting to talk to this particular web service over here. It gets given back a token for that particular SPN that it allows it to authenticate and secure the message with that service. So it's all encapsulated in this turnkey policy assertion that can be generated via the tools inside Visual Studio with Wizzy.
Okay, and so it says here you derive separate keys from the session key because this is better?
Yeah, so what derived keys give you is that it gives you an added level of security of the message. You get given that session ticket for Kerberos, but you don't necessarily always want to use that on every message, because if you did have an eavesdropper, they could take one of those messages and attempt to try and crack it, although it is notoriously hard. So instead, we simply derive another unique key for that particular message and use that when sending the message. So even if they did crack the key in the message, they can only decrypt that particular message only and not all the subsequent ones.
Okay. Well, that sounds super.
So it's yet more security on top of security.
Which just sounds great. I mean, I'll go for that one. Okay. All right. So let's talk through the process of how this actually works when the client wants to make the request. Dwayne?
Okay. Yeah, this is just a quick overall, quick high-level step through the process where a user logs in at a workstation and they're authenticated. So we kind of take the story from there. And what happens at this point is they're using an application that needs to access a service, for example. So what will happen is under the covers, the client will request a service ticket to communicate with that service. And how this plays into the Kerberos security policy assertion in Wizzy is the policy assertion will actually go out and facilitate obtaining a service ticket for the target service as specified by the SPN. An SPN is a service principal name, and it's a way of identifying to the KDC exactly who that client wants to talk to. And service principal name, there's a lot of you know, particulars about the format. There's usually, I don't know the official term for it, but there's a prefix on it where it can be either host or HTTP, and it usually indicates the purpose of the service principal name.
Service class.
Yes, thank you. Service class. Thank you, Lonnie. And so, for example, in this case, we use HTTP because we're dealing with a lot of web services, and later on we talk about advanced scenarios. We'll show how to transition from message layer Kerberos into transport layer Windows integrated in the same call. And that service class, which one you use, has a lot of effect on your capabilities of accessing downstream resources.
One thing that's interesting with the SPNs is that they're actually mapped to the account that the service is running under in Active Directory.
Yes. They have there. You go into the domain. Once you set up an SPN, you can configure, or you set up an SPN. You map it to an account. You set resource access for constrained delegation, things like that, which is an interesting topic and another story unto itself.
Okay, and in fact, one of our listeners is asking, what about configuring a service principal name for use with Wizzy? Is there something special you have to do to make it work with Wizzy?
No, the SPN is all centered around Windows Kerberos infrastructure. So the SPN concept is nothing particular to web services in any way. SPNs are where you go up and say this particular machine is allocated this SPN. It's part of the Kerberos infrastructure, and so it allows you to call onto that machine running under that particular account. So it's part of the Kerberos infrastructure, and we happen to be able to just take advantage of that to secure messages.
Okay. All right. So when this client application, it goes off and gets a service ticket, and it can sign the message, encrypt the message, and sends it off to the service. And then on the service end, what happens?
Then on the service end, the service validates the Kerberos token. There's an entire process there by which there's proof. There's a session key. It can verify that, you know, if the information it's expecting hasn't been, you know, tampered with or mutilated effectively, you know, it can decrypt it and make sense of it. And then at that point it uses the key derivation mechanism. It uses drive keys to actually decrypt the message and verify signatures based on that original session key. The keys used for encryption and signing were created from that.
Okay. And then from there, if you needed to, you could impersonate and do whatever or send a response. Okay. So let's talk about the devil's in the details, my friend. It all sounds so easy the way you describe it there. What do you got to do to make this work?
Well, one of the really interesting things, just to talk about the process on the server or on the service, is that one of the cool things you can do is when you obtain the token, the Kerberos token on the client, send it to the service, you can set it for two different levels of impersonation. You can either set it for identification or for impersonation. So, for example, if you set it for identification, then the token is good to authenticate the user and provide some information and the keys, but not to actually take that token and use it to effectively act as the user to access something else.
Oh, so if Don sends me a message with his Kerberos token, says I can only authenticate, I can't impersonate him and send a nasty mail to Bill Gates, for example.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. That's a good thing.
but we all trust Don, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
Okay. We did last week.
Yeah, Don was our CA for X509 last week.
So. Okay, all right.
And so this week he's the KDC.
Sweet.
Okay, so but you have to enable WSI support in the applications. What is involved there?
There's two different ways. I like to refer to it as the easy way and the hard way to enable WSI. Generally, it's very easy to do. You just go into Visual Studio. You right-click on the project. There's a WSI Settings 3.0 menu item you select, and up comes a configuration tool. From there, on the main tab, you just check the box to enable WSI support. And you have to do that for both the client and the service applications. Once you go in and of course, since you're leveraging the infrastructure, the ideal practice is to go in and set up a service account. There are some other options available, but they're generally not desirable, especially in the case of Windows XP in a development environment, which, we may have time to discuss later. But the best practice is to go in and set up a service account on the domain for the service. So it has its own identity and it can be distinctly recognized as such by a client. So when it goes to the KDC and says, you know, I want to talk to service XYZ based on that SPN, then there's a pretty clear understanding who they're talking to. So basically on Windows Server 2003, it's easier to set up again. I alluded to that earlier.
And of course, everybody should be running that by now.
Right. The ASP.NET worker process, again, it works out of the box on Windows Server 2003, but it doesn't work across web farms, and there's really no fine-grained control over security. It's just everything running under ASP.NET under the default settings. That's kind of one of the trade-offs. Again, easy setup, but not very granular control. You can't really do the best practice of minimum privilege and lock things down. You can't really differentiate based on the service that you're communicating with.
All right. Okay. So then the client application. So we have to do the same thing by enabling the policy. And then what are these other things here, though?
Well, the client and the service setup are similar. Basically, you go and use the WSI Settings tool. You select Secure Client Application. You can select your method of how you secure it. You can select X509. Basically, it's Windows Certificate, username, and I think there's one more off the top of my head. It's escaping me right now.
Anonymous.
Thank you. Yeah, that's probably why I don't remember it.
Anything that's insecure just slips right through his mind.
I have selective memory like that. So anyway, what you do is once you've selected your option for securing the client using Windows Authentication, you select your impersonation levels, what I talked about before. This is a really cool feature of doing the message layer security. You can select impersonation or identification, and then you select your protection options for the message. And, you know, normally we recommend doing encrypt, sign, and encrypt the signature, because that way what happens is you generally want to encrypt the signature for any encrypted content that you sign. And that would reduce the susceptibility of the message and the signature to offline cryptographic attacks. And an alternate to encrypt, sign, encrypt signature, for example, in the situation where you need to start leveraging the flexibility of message layer security, where an intermediary may need to check some part of the message or need access to some part of the message, is if it needs to verify signatures even, or do routing, dynamic routing based on a message signature, then you could do encrypt and then sign.
Okay. And then last of all, some more stuff on the service side. That we talked about most of this already. This is basically like the mirror image of setting up those WSI config, right?
Yeah, it's very close. The only difference on the client side is you're specifying the service principal name, the SPN for the service. And on the service side, it doesn't have that. But what it does have is you would generally set up your authorization there. So you could authorize clients via the claims that would come across in the Kerberos token based on what roles they belong to or based on their user identity.
Okay, so I want to get right to this demonstration and walk through this. So go ahead and fire that. Who's doing that? Dwayne? Okay, so go ahead and go to that sharing slide, and let's bring that up.
While everyone's waiting for that, we have a question. The SPN must be mapped to a user account, correct? And that's the user account that the application's running under?
Right,
the domain account.
Yes.
Well, and for a web farm implementation, but for the default implementation, there's a built-in SPNs that map to the host account for the computer. So there's nothing that you need to do as far as mapping an SPN or configuring an SPN for out-of-the-box implementations.
Okay, so that's more the advanced way to do it if you had to do it for a web farm.
Right, if you had to do a web farm implementation, or if you want to use something like protocol transition with constrained delegation where you need to do impersonation and be able to delegate credentials across boundaries, then you need to set up a domain service account and map an SPN to that service account.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's see this little walkthrough here, Dwayne.
Okay, basically what this is a very simple client, WinForm client application. We're accessing a web service to obtain information about products. Okay, and you can see here the request response.
And the ever classic foo.
And the ever classic foo, exactly. Product foo is in very high demand these days.
That's right. So by the way, to our listeners, if you will hit F5 on your keyboard, you'll see a nice full screen view here. Okay, go ahead.
And some of the key components of this are the client side, just to show how simple the code is, to call the web service. The key things that we do here are we set the policy. We generate a web service proxy. And when you enable WSI support in your web service apps and then you add a web reference, it generates a different web service proxy,
right.
and which enables you to set some other things like set policy, which is very important. And what this does is this binds your communication through the proxy to a specific policy in WSI. And then after that, it's just a regular call to the web service.
Okay, and that policy is what you named it with the configuration
right,
tool.
Right, Kerberos client. And the policy cache file itself looks like this. And here you see we've got our Kerberos security policy assertion. I have my target principal. This is my SPN with my host name. You've got your impersonation level set to impersonation. You've got message protection options here for encrypting and signing, which you don't really need to specify, but we include them here so that people can see what the heck's going on. One of the other things that the key components of this, again, you know, this is the hard way of configuring it. You could go in here and tweak the policy config file by hand. The easiest way is to hit that WSI settings tool to come in here. For example, if I want to enable policy, here's my Kerberos policy client. I can replace it, add. Again, you know, foo is very pervasive these days in security as well as products. You go through the security settings wizard here. We select secure client application, Windows.
Slow down just a little bit.
Okay. All right. I need to switch to decaf apparently, so I'll slow down. And then let me back up here. This is kind of what I talked about before, where you select securing a client application, select Windows, and then here you have the option of specifying the Kerberos token in code, or you could enter the service principal name here. You select the impersonation level, your identification or impersonation level. So, you know, for example, I might be going to HTTP server. And again, this is the service class, this piece before the slash. There are different service classes. Generally, the general host one is host. But in some cases, you may need to use something a little more specific, which we'll talk about in the advanced scenario here, where we would transition from message layer security into Windows Integrated, where we would need to use HTTP.
So why would I use the specify Kerberos token in code?
Well, you'd do that just because you may not want to put the SPN declarative in your policy file.
Oh, okay.
And that's where it gets written if you don't choose a code option. So the code option might be, you have a drop-down, you select a number of different servers, and you're using the same policy to collect to different SPNs.
Oh, I gotcha.
But if you specify in your policy file, it's sort of fixed for that particular
service. Oh, I see. Okay.
Service. So, for example, yeah, if you have multiple servers you communicate with and you want to derive an SPN, you know, based on a URI or something like that, and you want to determine that dynamically, you can plug it in.
I got it. Okay.
One of the practical uses that we found for that.
Whereas in the example here, we've just shown that you'll see that the SPN's in the policy file.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next step would be to select your message protection options. Another option here is to enable WSecurity 1.1 extensions, which are selected by default. That gets you a few extra capabilities like signature confirmation and things like that. It's not the same thing as regular message signatures, but what it is it's a mechanism to provide correlation between a response message and the request message that prompted it. And that's a specific feature to WSecurity 1.1. So if you have some compatibility or interoperability issues that you need to address in your solution, then you would enable or disable those.
Isn't there a performance optimization in the 1.1 extensions also, or is that just for X509? Or isn't
it generally, as far as I know, that's X509, isn't it, Mark?
Yes, that is. That's for X509. Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, the way to think about it is WSecurity 1.1 extensions is the specification applies to any token type, whether it's Kerberos or X509. It just added some additional capabilities at the message level to further add security. The message confirmation one was simply that the client could confirm that the message had actually been processed by the service, as an example.
Okay.
So the options we talked about, the protection options, we can sign only, we can sign and encrypt, we can sign, encrypt, encrypt signature. My resolution's running really weird. My screen's stretched out, so you can't see this whole thing on the box in the secure session pane. But it says establish secure conversation, and that's very important to optimize communications. One of the things that we found when you're establishing secure conversation, there were some quirks with that based on how you cache or you persist the base token for a secure conversation. There's two modes essentially. There's a cookie mode where it's blobbed back to the back and forth in the client in the token, and there's another one where the server actually caches it. And since Kerberos has a built-in replay detection mechanism, you may run into some issues if you run secure conversation with Kerberos in cookie mode.
Okay.
So, and it's easy enough to go in and change that config setting so it's not running in cookie mode if you need to do that. So here we just confirm our security settings and we have our policy foo.
Gotcha.
So just as an example.
Cool. And I wanted to let everybody know that's watching this that all the code that Dwayne is showing right now is available inside the quick starts, which are available on the Web Service Security Guide community workspace. And I believe there's a link in one of the later slides, I think on the more information slide, I think there's a link to that workspace where you can download these quick starts. So hopefully there weren't people out there trying to type all this in as they were seeing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, are you finished, Dwayne?
Just one real quick thing on the policy on the service side. The difference to point out there is that we've got this authorization assertion. And the really nice part about this is that what will happen is the security token will have an identity and a principal attached to it that's created by a token manager.
Okay.
And you can do authorization, as I had mentioned before, you can do an allow-based model or deny-based model. based on roles or identities of users authenticating.
Yeah, that's yet another advantage of using Kerberos as a token type, that it allows you to map the person to roles, and that gets sent as part of the Kerberos token, so they can have a principal name at the server side. They can determine what their roles are for that particular user.
Yeah, great. Okay. Oh, I'm so sorry, but we're out of time for this episode of ArtCast. But we'll be back with another episode where we'll have the second half of Web Services Security Patterns, securing with the Kerberos token and WYSIWYG3 and the gang. That was such a fun day. You know, you can tell we were having fun in there. And in fact, you know, that's what some people really like about the show. Here's a guy, Jordan, who writes, "Hey, Ron, I've been listening to ArtCast since its inception and some of your very first talks about Enterprise Library. Love the talks on the Delta Lounge." Yeah, those are way back on my personal site. But anyway, we're just so glad you guys are listening. And, you know, there's always a few people who complain, you know, "You guys are too unprofessional. Come on, straighten up. Be serious." But, I think we have way too much of that. Okay, we have tons of webcasts that sound really straight-laced, professional, and boring. But on ArtCast, we like to have some fun.
Next time on ArtCast, Ron Jacobs.
But I thought this was like, I check a box in the wizard and it does it.
Mark Fussell.
It's not that you personally have to read through this big, log, heavy spec.
Okay, good.
And, oh, no.
Dwayne Taylor.
Yeah, you as a human being don't necessarily have to understand.
Marty Wall.
So you don't really know which computer that you're going to access.
Don Smith.
It's a great resource for web service security.
And Ron Jacobs. Again.
If those guys at the CTU counterterrorism unit start trying to decrypt my messages, I'm toast.